So thank you so much for joining us on Let the Healing Begin podcast. I'm your host, Asia. And today we have Joanne Fawcett on with us. How are you doing, Joanne?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. Thank you for making time.
Sure.
So where are you from?
I live in Portland, Oregon.
Okay. Are you born and raised there?
No, I've lived here for 3 years. I moved up here to be near my daughter and grandkids during COVID. I used to live in Northern California.
Okay. So what made you move?
That's a complicated question, but long story short, COVID happened. I didn't want to be by myself because I was living by myself in my ex-husband's house. And it's really old and it needs a lot of work and it's falling apart. And he and I hadn't started really not getting along yet, but we were heading there. And I just decided during COVID, I didn't want to be by myself because he's in prison and I couldn't see him and there was no visiting for a year. And I didn't know it was going to be no visiting for a year, but I just made up my mind to take care of myself and move to a place where I could be around people.
Okay. So now you said this is your ex-husband or your husband?
Ex.
Okay.
Many so exes.
Yeah. So let's go back to your childhood. What was it like for you growing up?
I grew up in Southern California. I'm the third of four children. I have an older sister, older brother, a younger sister. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, except for a short period when I was a teenager and my parents were separated, but they got back together. My dad, was a manager and for different things. And he was also an alcoholic. So that was an interesting dynamic. He wasn't a mean alcoholic, but he was an alcoholic. And so I learned codependency from my mom, making sure everybody's okay and taking care of everybody and, learning to be the caretaker and pleasing people. And, I was a good student. I was a Girl Scout. And I joined the Mormon church somewhere in there. And, so it was just kind of normal suburban life for me. We went camping a lot when I was a kid and, pretty much what everybody else was doing in Southern California in the suburbs.
Yeah. So I know you said your father was an alcoholic. Did your mom ever use drugs or drink?
She drank on occasion, but I think hers was more socially. They both smoked. But no, she just drank on occasion. I'm not saying she never got drunk, but I never saw her drunk. So, yeah.
So with, your father being an alcoholic, did that affect, who would you say that affected the most between like you and your brother and sister?
I'm sure it affected all of us. My younger sister probably didn't really know what was going on. And, but again, I was the one who became the more codependent person because I remember sitting, it was like close to New Year's, or it might have been even New Year's Eve, and it was this one time period where my parents were separated, and I was calling around to different friends, trying to find out where he was so that my mom wouldn't be alone on New Year's Eve. It was either Christmas or New Year's, but he did come home for Christmas that year. So we'll just say it was New Year's because I don't remember which holiday it was. And I remember calling some friends who were really close and they wouldn't tell me where he was. And I just remember sitting on the couch with my mom, feeling so bad for her and probably crying with her, and she really kept things like that to herself because she grew up, with Midwestern family ethics and even though she grew up in California, but you don't talk about what's bothering you and you just hold it all in. But I watched her and I could see that it was really hard, and I was very good at being codependent and being a caretaker later on. So
at what age were you when you would have incidents where you would have to, call around and look for your father?
Oh, that was only the one time. And I was probably junior high, early high school, maybe junior high, I think. So that was the only one time I really called around. But it was just that memory just stuck with me for a very long time.
Now, let me ask you this, growing up and watching your father drink like that, did you ever have moments where you would think, like, when I get older, I'm never going to drink because of this?
By then, I was a Mormon, so you don't drink when you're when you're a good Mormon. You don't drink, you don't smoke, you don't drink caffeine. So, yeah, that never even crossed my mind that I would even try it. And I like the smell of coffee. I never drank coffee. I still don't. I'm not a Mormon anymore, but I love my tea and I love Coke or Diet Coke. But I never, I drink very little. So, yeah.
Okay. So I know that you said that your mom, with her growing up, they were taught never really to, I guess, display how they felt, like their emotions. Did she repeat that with you guys?
Yeah, it's pretty funny because her mom was born in Indiana and lived in Oklahoma for a while. Then they moved to California, probably, before my mom was born, I'm sure. And I remember when I was researching my genealogy and my family history, and I was trying to get information out of, and nobody had any stories to tell me, I ended up getting more just basic family story stuff from my great aunt who lived in Oklahoma. And then even when down the road and I was having problems with the husband and, my mom said, what I'm going to tell you, I've had a similar experience with a husband she told me, it's like, well, I was divorced once. So she and I had some similar experiences, but she goes, you don't talk about this to the other kids. And, I'm not going to give you any details. I was like, wow. So it's like, they were you didn't talk about the family secrets. And you really, it's like, well, can't you just tell me like the fun stuff growing up? Or like, it's just, they just didn't talk. They didn't say stuff. They didn't share. And yeah. So, and then, and I don't know if this is a funny story or not, but just growing up, like, okay, so this, it's not like we turned to our friends and said, well, my dad's drinking too much. What do I do? Type of thing. You kept your secrets at home. And also, even as I was a teenager, as far as, making out with boys, she would say, well, okay, don't make out in the backseat of the car because you'll get in trouble. I go, well, what does that mean? Could you tell me? It's like, so, my sister and my daughter and I, we didn't get much sex education from home because, they just were not going to talk about it. It's like, yeah. It's like,
so let me ask you this. So like, with a lot of the things like not being talked about, during your childhood and young adult years, like once you had gotten out on your own, did you have moments where you wished those things would have been talked about so you would feel like more prepared?
Oh yeah. It's funny because when I went to college and this was a silly thing, it's like, I washed dishes at home and, did chores, but I never had to do my own laundry until I went to college. It's like, calling on the phone, Mom, how do I do my laundry? It's like, do I separate it? Do I throw it all in the same thing? It's like, so that's the silly side of it. Thankfully, my daughter learned how to do her own laundry when she was like 10, and her kids know how to do their own laundry. It's like, that's the silly thing. But again, it's like, she didn't talk about sex. She didn't talk about birth control, even though the Mormons, really don't believe in all that. But she didn't talk about, how you even figure out if he is Mr. Right. It's like, how am I supposed to figure out, what qualities to be looking for? I just knew that, okay, I'm a Mormon. I want to have a happy little family. And whoever I marry in the Mormon church, we're obviously going to have a happy little family. Okay. That didn't turn out. I married 5 Mormons and they were all losers. So, so it was just some of those basic things. And the other thing is, for example, my parents, we grew up watching them fight over paying bills or just having it be a very tense moment every month. And then my dad died and my mom's going, I have no clue how to pay bills. And by then I was a bookkeeper. So it's like, what do you mean? We watched you two pay bills every month. And she goes, I was only allowed to put the check in the envelope. It's like, oh my goodness. And so one of my whys for being a bookkeeper is to help people not be that financially ignorant, and to especially to help women who find themselves, you know, suddenly widowed or divorced and who have never had to handle their own finances. So it's like, here, let me tell you and let me show you. And, you know, nowadays, like, here's how you get, you know, go online and get your banking information. Here's how we get the transactions and let me do the hard stuff. But at least I can show you the basics and let's set you up a budget so that you know which bills are due when, so you're not spending it all before the bills are due, type of thing. And that just, again, that just blew my mind when my mom said, I don't know how to pay bills. It's like, what? So, you know, that's definitely something, a conversation and a life experience you need to be sharing with your children if you have children. And if you're married or have a partner, at least you kind of need to be talking about your finances.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So let me ask you this. I know you said when you started like researching your genealogy and stuff like that, what did that do for you?
Well, I loved that. And I haven't gone back as far as I want. I'm back four or five generations on most of, at least four generations on all my lines, on both my father and my mother's side. And I've gone back a little bit farther, probably on my mom's side, because there was more information. But I loved really tapping into where I was from and who I might be related to. And even though a lot, my ancestry is basically from the British Isles or Germany, and then some, you know, Native American here in the United States. But it's like, okay, I haven't been to Germany at all, but I really want to go to Germany, to that little part outside of Berlin, you know, where our people were from. And I've been to England many times, but I haven't spent any time in the area where our British ancestors were from. And I'd love to do that, because I just love getting the feeling of, you know, where they were from and where my roots are. And, you know, I'm all into that.
Absolutely. So let me ask you this. Like, I know when you said you started doing the bookkeeping, did you then like start teaching your mom that information?
No, it was too late for her. I would get together with her once a month and I'd reckon, you know, I'd go through her checking accounts and stuff, and I would help her pay the bills. And, you know, she would, you know, she'd get all the bills, because back then I don't even know if we were doing computers yet, but and the computers and the internet was just starting back in the late 90s. So, you know, we weren't doing online banking for sure. I would help her get the bills paid, and I would help her keep everything organized. So then it was time for the tax person. You know, we would have all that ready, and I could have it at least all written out on a spreadsheet with, you know, the things added up into categories for her. And her stuff wasn't very hard. You know, she wasn't working, and, you know, she just had, you know, the house payments and the mortgage and the property taxes. And she didn't have a lot of, you know, complicated business expenses or anything like that. So I just kept it organized, and my sister lived next door to her. So, you know, they were more day to day, and I would see her once a month. And, you know, that was part of my visit. We would take care of the money.
Okay. So if you don't mind me asking, how old were you when your father passed away?
Oh, man. I would have been in my early 20s, because I'd had my daughter. So early to mid 20s, because he died when he was 49. Mm-hmm. So we've all grown past the age of my dad, and my mom was 69. So I'm just hitting the age where, I mean, I am 69. So she died February. So she died like a few weeks before her 70th birthday. So, you know, my goal is to get past that. You know, my older brother and sister have all gotten past that. So,
yeah. So how did that affect you guys?
Which one? My dad's dying?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it was, I have to say, it made me, you know, part of grief is anger, but he died, he got cancer, and this is going to make me cry, but he got cancer because he was a smoker and a drinker, a heavy smoker and a drinker, and that causes bladder cancer, and that's what he got. And back then, you know, I don't know so much now if they tell you, you only have 2 years to live, but back then they were still doing that. They said he had 2 years to live, and that's all he did. Did he ever give up smoking? No. Wow. He figured, well, I'm going to die anyway. You know, it's like, really? And, you know, it was kind of funny, because back then when he was sick, my daughter was, you know, toddler, and maybe two, but a toddler, definitely a toddler. And she had a cousin that's 3 months older. You know, they would sit on grandpa's lap, grab his cigarettes out of his pocket and like break them in half. And I just thought that was so funny. And it's like, I think that's hilarious. But my dad never stopped smoking. So it's like, and by then he figured, well, it's too late. I might as well do what I enjoy. And unfortunately, I moved out of state, so I wasn't with him in the last months of his life, which I totally regret. But, you know, it's like I'm very passionate about, you know, telling my daughter, my, you know, nieces and nephews and grandkids, like, you know, grandpa died from this. Don't smoke or drink. Of course, you know, you can't control. It's like, do you not get it? Why are you smoking? Yeah. So, you know, everybody has to make their own choices.
Absolutely. So if, let's say we have a listener that's listening right now that, because grief is hard. Grief is extremely hard.
It is.
But let's say we have somebody that's going through that, or maybe they do have a parent that passed away years ago and they just are having a hard time and just can't seem to pick themselves up. What would you say to that listener?
Well, the woo side of me would say, get with somebody who can help you talk to your parent on the other side, because I love doing that. Not everybody believes that that is a real thing. But, you know, you could just probably sit with yourself, sit in a quiet place and be thinking about them. Just, you know, quiet your mind and be thinking about them. You could journal about them or journal what you're thinking, and take really good care of yourself. Maybe go get a massage and just kind of zone out while you're thinking about your parents. But, you know, think about everything about them that made you happy. And maybe even, again, anger and... there's so many stages of grief. What is it, 7 or something like that? And, you know, anger is a part of it. And then you get, finally you get to the point. And I'm not a grief expert. I know there are people who are and have written books about that. But, you know, again, and another side of that, it's like my daughter's father died. He committed suicide when she was 5 weeks old. So she never knew him.
Wow.
And he and I were heading, he kicked me out while he was, you know, I was 7 months pregnant, but he saw her twice. And she always stayed close with his side of the family. But it's like, she didn't have full closure till like just a couple years ago when the family got together to dispose of several family members' ashes, mm-hmm. you know, and they did it as a family. And that really helped them all heal and have closure. But again, you know, if you can find somebody to like talk to about, you know, whoever it is that passed away in your life, that helps too. But if there's nobody to talk to, you know, therapists are good for that. But also just maybe write stuff down in a journal, or maybe write your parent a letter.
Absolutely. I just lost my whole train of thought. So at what age did your daughter start, like, would she start asking about him and things like that? And how did you explain it to her?
I never hid the fact that her biological father had died. And thankfully, again, we stayed really close with her grandparents. So they were, and I didn't know him very long before we got married. So I didn't know a ton of stuff about his life, but being close with his parents, you know, we could find out what his childhood was like. And we saw, you know, pictures and movies of his family and their, you know, their camping and vacations, and they were big, you know, they did a lot of sailing and stuff. So she was able to learn a lot about him through his parents and his sisters that were alive. So that was really good. And again, you know, it's like, I didn't make a big deal out of it. And yeah, of course now, you know, and I didn't wait till she was way old to tell her, well, your dad killed himself and this is how he did it. I mean, she knows, and I don't remember, you know, she was probably quite a bit older. I don't know if I, you know, I don't know how old she was when I told her what exactly happened. I wasn't there when it happened, but thankfully, but it, you know, she might've known, you know, she certainly knew, you know, by 8 or 9, I mean, she knew that her dad wasn't around because I had married other people, you know, so, and she knew they weren't her real father.
Yeah. You know, and that's really good that you like built that trust and that honesty with her. You know,
yeah.
some parents are so worried about, oh, what if I tell them, you know, but I think honesty is really important, you know, so that, you know, because it's not fair to build something on a lie, you know, so to have that trust and that honesty there, you know, that establishes you know, that lets her know that, okay, look, if nobody else is going to tell me the truth, I know I can go to mom and she will, you know?
Right. And yeah, I didn't really try to hide things from her. The worst thing I did for her was marrying loser stepfathers. And it's taken her and I a long time to heal from that. But one of the blessings from me moving up here to Portland is we've had lots of time together. And, you know, she lives 6 blocks from me. So, and we work in the same neighborhood. So it's like we've had lots of time to bond and talk and really heal a lot of those old wounds. And we're brutally honest with each other, even about the things that hurt. You know, it's like, okay, your mom doesn't want you to tell her that, but oh yeah, you got to tell me.
Yeah,
and absolutely. I told her things that I don't share with anybody else. So
yeah
that's it's awesome. Good.
So let me ask you this. Like prior to her father committing suicide, were there any signs that you like would realize?
Yeah. I mean, again, we only courted for a month and then we got married, which is not something I would recommend to people. And I knew really soon into the marriage, like, okay, he drinks too much. And I'm now just finding out. And I knew he smoked pot. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I knew that before we got married. But if I didn't, it didn't take me long to figure that out. And I found out pretty soon into the marriage that he was addicted to Valium because of an injury he had got in the Navy. But his parent, or not his parent, like his sister, who was also a Mormon at the time, just she and her husband figured, oh, well, you know, if we can just get him to marry this nice Mormon girl, that'll straighten him out. His mental health will be fine. He won't be depressed. He'll get off all this stuff. Well, that, you know, you can't change somebody just because you have him marry a nice Mormon girl. Right. And so pretty soon I'm buying alcohol for him. Just buy me some this on the way home from work. It's like, I've never walked into a liquor store in my life, dude. This is not a comfortable thing for me to do. But yes, I could see there were some signs. And, you know, it's at one point, he had an accident on his motorcycle and was in the hospital. And then doctor wanted to keep him in for a psych eval. And I think he maybe stayed in the hospital for a few days after that. But it's like, you know, I got to get out of here. It's like, okay. And like I said, at 7 months, and he was getting like paranoid or really anxious. So I could see that. And he was happy that we were going to have this baby because he wasn't allowed to see his first child. So he was really happy. But then, you know, then things would get weird. And I remember one time I got right in his face and I said, I hope nothing's wrong with this baby because you've done all these drugs. And, okay, that's the wrong thing to say to a person that does drugs because, yeah. You know, he's right in my face back and it's like, okay, please don't hit me. I'm sorry. It's like, I'm sorry I said that. He didn't hit me. But when I was 7 months pregnant, he just decided, you know, we were fighting and whatever, and he kicked me out, which was a good thing, except then he calls me up, you know, just went down the street to my sister's, and he calls me up, well, I'm going to commit suicide. Well, let me come back and comfort you. You know, so let me come back and talk. Well, that was, I mean, I did, but, you know, I could have died that night, and yeah. The baby would have died. It's like, that was not a good thing to do. And so he kicked me out. I moved back with my parents, and I know he was seeing a therapist. And I think at one point the therapist told me he was suicidal. It's like, I can't save him, you know? And he just didn't really think he needed a therapist. So it was, and I guess some of these problems, you know, I guess there were some mental health, depression type things when he was younger, because I know his parents mentioned it a bit, but, yeah, so it's very sad, and I don't know, you know, how it's like I could not have fixed that. You know, that's something somebody's gotta choose to get help. I could not have made him get help and protect myself and my baby. He did see her a couple times before he died, but that wasn't enough. And we were headed towards divorce anyway, because it's like, okay, I can't be with this guy. And again, you know, he's kicking me out, so it's like I don't know. And he wanted me to move back, but it's like, you know, I can't move back unless you're really a lot healthier, dude.
Absolutely.
I'm sure that kind of pushed him over the edge, but I'm not taking a baby into an apartment with a person who's that sad.
Absolutely. And you know, oftentimes, like when we deal with suicidal people, and it's a really hard situation, you know, because oftentimes, like, we want to save everybody, you know,
right?
But you can't really save someone that doesn't want to be saved, or you right. can't, you know, you still have to, like, make sure yourself is okay too, you know?
Exactly.
Like, because like you said, it's you and the baby, you know, it's not just you.
Right.
And oftentimes, like, we try to bear that burden, and we just can't save someone that doesn't want to be saved. You know, ultimately, they have to want to live, like, you know, and I know that life can be hard sometimes, and we all, you know, have rough days.
That's right.
But, you know, you have to survive for yourself, you know?
Yes.
And you can't.
Oh, go ahead. Keep going. I'm sorry.
No, you can't force someone to stay that just doesn't want to be here. You know, as sad as it sounds, and, you know, it may sound tough to some people, but it just is what it is.
You that's know, right. And again, it's like, I mean, I'm very open about, I do communicate with people who have passed on, and I have, it's like, took me a long time to think, oh, maybe I should talk to him. and we did have a conversation, and, you know, he was really sorry. And, you know, he let me know that I did a really good job with our daughter. Mm. And that meant a lot. So,
yeah. So at what age was it when you got out on your own?
Mm. Well, right out of high school, I went to college. And I went to college for 2 years in Utah and got married. So I don't know that I was ever on my own.
Yeah.
I was never really, I'm on my own now. And I've been on my own for brief periods between husbands. But this is probably the longest I've been on my own, 3 years.
Okay. So after that situation happened and you met your next husband, like, how long were you guys married?
Which one?
The one after your daughter's father.
Okay. So number three. Okay. So we... I have to number them. I'm sorry. We were married, like, I'm thinking 5 years. And two of that was getting a divorce, because mm-hmm. it was a long process, because I had allowed him to adopt her. So it was like we were fighting, even though he couldn't. He was physically abusive, so we didn't want to see him. I didn't want her alone with him in a visitation situation, because he was more physically abusive to her than he was to me. And so I was like, well, you got to pay child support if you want visitation. Well, I can't afford, I don't want to pay child support. So it's like we were fighting, and all I ever got, and okay, this was still back in the, you know, 80s. It's like I got $100 a month awarded. And most of the time I didn't get any payments until he had a tax refund or something. So it's not like he paid regularly. You know, I had to wait. And then I finally got the last of it when she turned 18. But, yeah, we were together, you know, we lived together like 3 years, and he was really strict, and he thought, you know, he'd never had kids, but he thought he knew exactly how to raise those kids. And, you know, she's not even two and he's spanking her, and she's got heavy cloth diapers. And it's like, dude, what are you doing spanking my kid? Like, yeah. Well, she needs to be taught this. And okay, now it's time for her to get out of the crib. And now it's time for her to not have a bottle. And it's like, oh, dude. And we moved from Southern California to Ohio, and we were very involved with the church. Well, and before we moved to Ohio, it's like he had a fit about something. We were living in a mobile home in Southern California, and he got really mad about something and broke all the windows in our, you know, single wide mobile home. And I'm running down to the friends and it's going, what, you know, what do I do now? And I go to the church. In the Mormon church, they'll call bishops, not like ministers or pastors. But anyway, I went to the bishop and I said, you know, this is terrible. Well, has he hit you? I go, no. Do you think he's gonna? I was like, well, I don't know. It's like, I've never encountered this. And then he moved to Ohio before I did. And I, you know, followed along. But at one point when we lived in Ohio, I went out for the afternoon doing church service with one of the church ladies. And he was babysitting, and I came home, and here's my little toddler on the couch in her little pink quilted robe, just quiet as a mouse and with this huge bruise on her face. It's like, excuse me? What happened? And yeah, you know, she did something minor that ticked him off. And it's like, you can't, and again, it's like, I didn't call the police. I should have called the police on a number of occasions. Now, no, did he ever beat us to the point where we were at death's door? No, it doesn't really matter how little or how lot, you know, how much you're getting hit or, you know, hit on or whatever. And I don't think I ever took her to the doctor. But, you know, he hit me up the side of my head once and it didn't show. But I had such a bad headache. I went to the doctor and he's going, what's happening? What happened? I go, my husband hit me. The doctor was livid. And I remember, I think that was in that same incident. I think he went to raise his hand again and I grabbed his hand, like pushed his thumb back so hard that it almost, you know, broke it. It hurt him. So that's good. Yeah. But it's like, I never called the cops. And it's like, I should have called the cops. I should have called the church leaders. I should, because at church, you look great. And you're impressing everybody, but at home you suck.
Yeah,
that was awful.
Did you ever feel like guilty about not calling the cops, or you know?
I did later. Mm-hmm. I didn't know enough to know that I really should have done that, and that would have been okay. You know, I just didn't even know that I should have done that. I probably knew, but I didn't know. It's like, oh no, this, you know, this probably won't happen again. This is a one-time thing. But I don't know why I thought that, because he'd already been, you know, he'd spanked her a lot and or put her to her room. Or it's like, you know, it's like, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, when it came time to divorce, like, was that an easy process, or did he try to fight it at all?
He did, because I had moved back to California with her, and he moved back to California eventually, but he didn't live where I lived. You know, he probably moved back to Southern California. It was more just this fight. It's like, I don't think there was ever a case of should we get back together? That was never going to happen. But it was more like, again, the whole visitation, child support thing, because he didn't want to pay child support unless he could see her, and she didn't want to see him. Now, she did see him a couple times. One time he came up to where we lived, and he brought a friend with him. So the two of them, you know, entertained her, because it was her birthday weekend. So at least she wasn't alone with him. And the male friend that he brought, I knew him. So I trusted him to keep the other guy from beating on her or anything. But there was another, when she was a bit older, I did, when we were in Southern California to visit her grandparents, I let her go see him for a bit. But, you know, she didn't have fun. She didn't want to see him. And eventually he married somebody else with kids and ended up having his own kid. And so he lost interest. And then after, you know, years, we didn't hear from him again, which was fine. But yeah. And it's interesting, because there was somebody who interviewed his biological daughter years later. You know, they're all grown up and stuff, and her dad had died. And oh no, my dad was never abusive. He was great. I'm going, well, he must have changed dramatically, you know, and abusers don't usually change dramatically, but okay, if that's your story, I'm not going to fight you on it. You know, we're not in the same room. And so we're not going to have this discussion. But it's like, I just thought that was interesting for her to say that, you know, in a public interview. So, you know, more power to him if he was able to see the light and change. Most abusers that I know of don't change. So yeah. What can I say?
So how did you move on with life? I mean, after that, like, was it hard for you or?
No, you know, it's like I was living with my family. I moved my mom and my whole family moved from Southern California at the same time to Northern California. And my mom bought this big piece of property. So my brother lived like in the next two towns over. He lived nearby, and the rest of us all lived on this piece of 5 acre, you know, and there was like, you know, a house and like a little duplex next to it. And, you know, we had places for everybody to live. So it was great. So we're on this family compound and all the cousins could play with each other. And at the time, my grandma was still even alive. So, you know, they had the benefit of cousins and aunts and uncles and grandmas and great grandma. So it was great. And When we moved from Ohio to California, my daughter was 4 and then turning 5 like that summer. And so by the time she was 5 and starting school, I went back to work. So I had the luxury of not having to work for her first 5 years. So I went back to school. I started taking, I'd been a bookkeeper before that, but I wanted to start working towards my degree. So I took classes at night. My sister and I both started taking bookkeeping classes, and I was working during the day. But, you know, my daughter, she could go home and play with her cousins after school. And she had my grandma and my great grandma. So she had, thankfully I didn't have to pay for childcare. And so it was great. So yeah, I moved on. And then of course I got silly and like, oh, well, it might be time to date again. So then I did that. And then I got married again. And, you know, it's just kind of a never ending cycle. But yeah, I worked over the next many years. I always worked as a bookkeeper, but I didn't finally get I got a 2-year degree. You know, I didn't get it till I was 50, but I'd been working in that field for years because, you know, you don't have to have it to do a good job. And I just kept working, and I'm a really good, and I've been doing it for over 40 years, but I do have a 2-year degree. So
that's awesome. And you know, it's better late than never.
I know. I have two 2-year degrees. I even have a degree in film production. So I can make you a little movie, or I can do your books.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, like, while you were in that abusive relationship, did your family know at all?
That number 3 guy, they didn't know. Again, you don't share.
You didn't say that.
And he would have had a cow if he had known I told them. You know, I don't know what he would have done. He just, you know, don't you dare tell. And I remember my dad died when I lived in Ohio. And I talked to my dad a few times, but he was usually so out of it. He couldn't talk on the phone long. But he died, and they were going to do not a big funeral. They were just going to take his ashes and scatter them out at sea. And the ex or the husband at the time said, no, you can't go because I'm afraid you won't come back. And he would have been right. I would have left all my stuff in Ohio and stayed with my mom because it's easier to, you can reaccumulate the stuff.
Easy.
You know, it's harder to regroup yourself and get your mental faculties going again when you've had such a trauma. But he wouldn't let me go to my dad's funeral, and that was so heartbreaking because my parents, somebody would have found me the money to go.
Yeah.
But he would not let me go. And it's like, That might have been one of the only times where I ever used the F word. So,
yeah, that was really mean.
Yeah, it was awful.
Really mean.
It was terrible.
I know you mentioned a while ago, like earlier in the interview, that you had a husband that was in prison.
Yes.
So tell me about that situation. How did that happen?
So that was number 7. And we were together actually, you know, 25 years. And so I had a roommate for a while whose husband is in prison, and I had met him at the prison through her. You know, I went with her a couple times to visit him, and then I went, you know, I met this younger guy who was fun to visit with for a while. So visiting prison was not traumatic for me, because usually everybody's on their best behavior in the visiting room. And one day she came home from visiting her husband and said, oh, I met this really nice guy. He's your age. He's smart. He's visiting his mom. He's a friend of my husband's. Like, oh, smart would be a nice change for me as in a boyfriend. And so we started writing. And then a couple months later, I was approved to visit. And he was just so fascinating. You know, he grew up in his dad was in the Air Force, and his mom was beautiful, and she looked like Elizabeth Taylor when she was younger before her hair turned gray. So it's like, you know, he grew up as his only child. He's a military brat. He's really smart. He's had all these adventures all over the world. He was in the military himself and had just all these great stories about his family and, you know, his education and all this cool stuff about where he grew up in California and then the different places they lived when they were stationed overseas and things. So I thought, well, this is really cool. I really like him. We got along, you know, we talked about fun stuff. We never talked about the hard stuff, but we courted for 5 years. And finally, he's in prison. If you're married, you know, if you need to advocate for the inmate, it's better if you have a spouse. you know, just a girlfriend calling up and saying, oh, you're mistreating my boyfriend. They're not going to pay any attention to you. So you have a little bit more clout if your wife is calling up and saying, hey, what the heck's going on? And, you know, why isn't my husband getting the medical care he needs? Why isn't he getting his mail for, you know, weeks on end? It's like, so like one day he just finally said, well, you know, maybe we should just get married. It's like, is that a proposal? Or he might have said, we should probably just get married. Because that we're 5 years into this. It's like, is that a proposal? Like, you know, it wasn't very romantic, I can tell you that. And there was no getting down on one knee. I don't think I've ever had that anyway. Yep. But on the prison visiting floor, there is no getting down on one knee.
Yeah.
And I did have an engagement ring because he had his grandma's engagement ring. So he had his lawyer give that to me. And we got married on my birthday. I don't know, 20 something years ago. It would have been 21 if I hadn't gotten divorced this year. But we were together, you know, basically 25 years. And everything was going fairly well as far as I thought. Eventually, you know, I was helping take care of his mom because she had dementia. And I was managing that. I was managing her affairs. I was helping him with researching for his different creative projects. And eventually, and I even started a little publishing company to publish some of his stuff, but also some inmate stuff and some stuff I was writing and exploring and things. And, you know, as long as I was following his agenda and keeping him happy, everything was great. And then even before the pandemic hit, I'm thinking, okay, we're over 20 years into this. I'm now living in his house in a really nice part of Northern California. And it was once a really grand house, but it's really old. It's over 100 years old. And I was paying for all of it all myself after his mom died. And, you know, trees kept falling and things kept falling apart and there kept being holes in the roof and lots of things were going wrong because it's a 100-year-old house. And finally, I'm going, okay, I'm in my 60s now. How am I going to retire? He has a life without parole sentence. We know there could be some hope, but we don't know. And who knows when he's ever going to get out. And he says he has money somewhere, but I've never seen it. You know, I've never been allowed to meet his children. So all of a sudden, you know, that year before COVID, I'm going, you know, we need to have a plan. We need to have a plan because we're both in our 60s. I want to retire. I don't want to drop dead at my computer when I'm 90 from doing somebody's books. Yeah. And okay. You know, it's like, could you start thinking of the plan? And it took him a long time. We didn't talk about it for a long time. And then COVID hit. And I remember visiting him like right before they shut down visiting. And I was making silly remarks. Oh, you know, my granddaughter said I should probably, you know, she wanted to help me get new clothes. Oh yeah, that's a good idea. It's like, oh, you don't like my clothes? And it's like, and then I said something else that was kind of sarcastic, but he agreed with me. It's like, huh, that's how you see me?
Wow.
And so it's like, I started thinking, I really don't think I'm getting any of my needs met and I'm paying a boatload for his house.
Yeah.
And so it's like COVID hit. And again, you know, I didn't get a plan from him I don't even have a plan from him yet. And we're divorced. So nothing has happened. I got $500 out of him once. I go, there's another hole in the roof. The first one costs $1,000. This one costs $1,000. Do you think you could come up with some money? So I got $500, but it took months.
Yeah.
And, you know, then I started saying, well, you know, here's some of my needs. Here's some of, you know, I would like you to be able to tell me this or this. And it's like, well, you know, like, why do you like me? Why do you love me? Why do we get married? It's like, well, what man has to tell their wife that? It's like, if I love you, you know, it's like, obviously I love you if I'm still with you. It's like, no, excuse me. My, you know, my love thermometer, it's like, I need to hear something every now and then besides thank you for visiting, because that's meeting your need, you know? And it's like, and I've never been a size 2. I've been thin at times, but not usually. I'm not, you know, anyway, but it's like, okay, why didn't you want to maybe kiss me more? Why didn't you want to show a little more? Well, you should have tried to be prettier. It's like, hello?
Did he say that? He said that?
He said that.
Oh, it's
like,
no.
Are you freaking kidding me? It's like, oh my gosh. And then, you know, it took us 3 years to untangle the mess. And it's like, because we tried to, you know, and so I moved, like I said, I moved because of the pandemic, but it's like, then as things kept deteriorating, it's like, well, a good wife should be grateful that her husband provided this house for her to live in, and should be willing to, if her husband's in prison, should be willing to pay for some of the bills. It's like, I'm paying for all the bills. What part of most divorces happen because of sex or marriage? I mean, sex or money, you know, it's like, hello. And it's like, well, you started your business in my house and turned your back on my needs. I go, my business is paying for your bills. My business is keeping your house from the bank taking it over. You know, and I wrote a book and I finished it during, I started it before COVID, but finished it during. And it's like, well, you put your money into the book instead of helping do bills on, instead of paying for things on the house, or instead of helping me with my creative things. It's like, it really became apparent even more so during COVID what a narcissist he is.
Yeah,
and it was beyond being a spoiled brat, because he always joked about how spoiled he was, and he was an only child. So, you know, it's like, yeah, your parents did you no favor. Yeah. And it's, you know, I've never called him a narcissist to his face. I probably don't even dare. He knows I'm, and now I'm writing a book about it. I'm not using his name or anything. He knows about it somehow, you know, and it's like, I don't care. I was going to use a pen name. I'm not now. It's like, it's just, it's a big problem, but it's like, so yeah. So like, I've got lots of these mean letters.
Really?
And he's like, oh my goodness, how could you say this to me? It's like, eh. And even when I was visiting at the prison, most of the time, because we weren't trying to talk about anything hard, and we thought we had great communication. So it's like, oh, look, we're talking, we're not sitting there playing games and, you know, fighting. We're talking for 20 some odd years. It's like, yeah, but we didn't talk about the really important stuff. We talked about the kids, the grandkids, la, 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 la. Oh yeah, I had to fix that at the house. Okay. So it's like, I told you the whole time I was having to fix things, but that didn't sink in. That was just, you know, I felt like I'd become a secretary. I was just taking, or the administrative assistant, just taking care of the stuff. And
so yes, let me ask you this. Why would he never let you meet his children?
Well, they all live overseas.
Okay.
So, and because according to him, I've never been allowed to meet them or write them or email them or anything. And, you know, according to him, because supposedly he has money, they just assumed I was a gold digger. And yes, okay, look at Mary, getting with somebody that says he has money. I was impressed at first, but clearly, you know, that kind of wore off.
Yeah.
And so that was one argument. But one of his former partners had said, well, you know, you didn't marry me, so she can't talk to any of the kids or da, 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 da. Even though she wasn't the mother of all the kids, but it's like, you know, she had influence over everybody else in the family. So, you know, that was his storyline for all these years. And, you know, then he's writing these mean letters. So, well, you know, too bad you started acting this way and making all these demands, because they were about to start talking to you. It's like, well, okay. They could have talked to me all those years.
Yeah. And that's so manipulative.
Very, very. That's, and it's like, so now, you know, it's like people I know, my family, my friends, like, well, we don't even believe he has kids. And I do believe he has kids, because I've seen, you know, we have mutual friends that say, yeah, we know he was talking to his kids on the phone, and I've seen letters from his grandkids to him, because he sent them to the house and I would store all this crap for him. And, but I've never heard from them. So
Would that make you upset? Would you feel like, you know, because you with you guys being married, would you feel like you would want to, you know, be in their lives?
I did, because I'm, you know, it's like, I'm very motherly and I'm very grandmotherly, and I love family connection. So I just assumed that we'd be one big global family. Well,
yeah.
You know, and I really wanted to meet them, and I'm so impressed with so many of them, and it's like, wow. And
yeah.
And I almost got to meet one of them, but I had a friend with me, so he didn't come into the restaurant. And I think, you know, when I was in England one time and I was speaking at a conference, I think one of his granddaughters showed up.
Oh.
And he goes, well, so-and-so was there. And she was like the only teenager in the audience, but she didn't come introduce herself. So I go, well, I saw the teenager, so that must have been her. You know, so I think I do believe, it's like I never doubted that his kids or his grandkids existed. It's just sad because I like to have family connection.
Yeah.
So I don't care if you're biologically my family or not. I like the family connection. So I'm sad that that never happened.
So with you giving like that marriage that much time of your life, do you feel any resentment towards that? Or do you feel any like I wasted my time?
I'm sure I did. And yes, I've gone through a lot of anger, especially these last few years where we were passing letters back and forth. Now, I haven't talked to him in person since this past April when we had like one final in-person visit. And I said, okay, here's my deadline for paying for things. Okay, I'll get the money together. Okay, he's never gotten a dime together. And then we, for a while, the inmates have tablets so they can do games and whatever, and they can text. But, you know, the last text from him was like in May because we just, you know, okay, we're done talking about anything. And at that point, it was just like he was accusing me of, you know, wanting to grab all his stuff. I go, the house is not community property. I can't go after anything you have overseas because it's not mine. You know, it's not community property. It's like, get over it. So, yes, I have had some resentment. I've been in therapy for 3 years now, so I worked through a lot of that stuff. And I'm working a lot of it out by writing my books. But yeah, you know, it's like the 20 some odd years like went by so fast. Like, where did all that time go? Because, you know, I was just living life and doing my thing. I thought, well, this is my routine. I work. I go see him every weekend. And on the holidays, I split my time between him and my family. You know, I go see my daughter when, you know, because I was in California, she's up here in Oregon. It's like, I go see my daughter 3 or 4 times a year, blah, 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 blah. And that just seemed to be, okay, that's my life. And hopefully he'll get out. But it really became, it's like, dude, unless the laws change pretty quickly, you know, you're not getting out. So.
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, like sometimes God will place us in these seasons in our lives where like, because in that season, even though it's 20 years, like, you know, God is not in time like we are.
Right.
So that may have been your season to where, you know, God used you as a light in his life, you know, and maybe that season is just over with, you know, and.
Thank you. I love that because I kind of got the feeling that, okay, the life expectancy of this relationship is done. I've done what I was supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And I thought we were supposed to go on this path together throughout life. I now see that he's got this purpose to do and I've got a clearly different purpose to do. And I know that, and I wouldn't say because he's pining over me because he's still mad at me, but I know that he's not quite as happy as he used to be when I was going and visiting all the time. Mm-hmm. So, and he looks a whole lot older than I do. And we're only a year apart. It's like, oh, you've aged, dude.
Yeah. I mean, or it even could be, you know, maybe God walked you into that to start that publishing company to help publish, you know, work that inmates are doing to get their stories or their lives or whatever. You know, you never know the way that, because God has his own special way of doing things, you know, we don't always.
Right. And I loved publishing. Yeah. Stories that the inmates had written because they have a voice and some of them are really good writers and artists. And I loved sharing that through the publications I did.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
So are you finished doing that? Have you thought about keeping that going?
I'm not doing that anymore. I had started, he was part of a creative writing group and they were submitting things to me. So I did publish a little book of some of their stories. But one of their people took it, you know, took that project back for, because I hadn't, you know, published it in a shiny cover and stuff. It's like at the moment it was just all paperback. And so they weren't exactly happy. It's like, well, dude, I'm the one putting the money into it. So I'm not going to put, you know, a ton of money into a book like this when there's, you know, because it's hard to publish and it's expensive. And I started a website, which I will be taking down because it didn't go anywhere and somebody else, you know, should do that. But I think it's a great idea, and I think it's a great idea to promote their creative efforts because there's some very talented people behind bars.
Absolutely. You know, here where I am, they actually do like a art, like they do an auction, an art auction, where
it's
all inmates, artwork, and they sell jewelry, just all type of stuff. And people come, it's a silent auction. It's actually one coming this Saturday. They do stuff like that. So,
well, in California, they used to have a really good hobby program, and it's certain, and they still, you can still do hobbies, but not on the grand scale that you used to be able to do. And years ago, even before I met him, it was like a few of the prisons would have like a gift shop, and civilians could go into the gift shop and buy these cool things that, you know, whatever the inmates made. So, so that was pretty cool. And I know where he's at, somebody got a whole bunch of them the inmates, there's this huge crocheting group. So they make all these, you know, scarves and hats and stuffed toys. So they'll donate them to maybe, you know, kids at risk, or they'll donate a bunch of stuff to veterans at the veterans hospital. So they're doing good work, which I love. And they really, between the veterans and the crocheting group, they give back to the community. And every now and then they get, you know, that gets publicized, which is really nice. So, you know, they are doing some good things, and, you know, it's valuable, and they get so much out of it. So
that's awesome. So I know you said you are writing a book.
I am.
So what all collectively, like, what are you doing these days?
Well, I'm still working. I'm still doing my bookkeeping work. Hopefully I'll be able to retire sometime next year or the year after that, because I really think I deserve retirement. And like I said, my daughter lives close by, so I see her, and I've got some friends, and I'm finally getting ready to like branch out and meet people that have similar interests as mine. And I'm working on book number two. Excuse me. And I know at least there's another two or three books after that are, you know, in me somewhere. So that's it. I've got earlier this year, I went on a cruise with my sister and her husband, and it looks like I might be joining them again next year. So at least for the last leg, they're going on like a 28-day cruise. I go, well, I could join you for the last week.
Yeah.
So 28 days. I love to travel. You know, Scotland is on my bucket list. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, I live pretty simply. It's me and the two cats.
Okay.
And I walk pretty much every day. So that's my meditation time. That's my downtime. That's my quiet and my exercise. So I, you know, it's multi-purpose walking.
Absolutely. So if people want to get in contact with you to work with you further, how do they find you?
So my best email for that right now is Joanne, Joann, at midlifemagic.biz. I'm on Facebook under Joanne Fawcett. There's an author page. I'm on Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn. It's all under Joanne Fawcett. And what else am I doing? Oh, if they want my first book, which is called Midlife Magic, and that is under my old married name, Joanne Richards, that's on Amazon and all the places. But if they want like a signed copy, the website is dragonhillbooks.net. So you can find me.
Okay.
Yeah.
I appreciate your time today, Joanne.
Oh, thank you. You're wonderful. Thanks for having me. Thanks for all the good work you're doing behind the scenes. I know you've got your, you know, you got a lot of irons in the fire too, and you're doing good things. So that's great.
You know, and it's all God, honestly. He's leading me and ordering my steps, and, you know, he's telling me what to do, and I'm just doing it.
That's good. And I don't call it God, but I do live by guidance and stuff. So, you know, we're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
We're getting guidance from a good source. So that's good.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us on Let the Healing Begin podcast. Please head over to www.greatergrowthllc.com. Support the t-shirt and sweatshirt brand. You can also head over to Amazon, purchase a copy of Back in My Day by Asia Wilson. And then you can also check out the link tree to see what other services we have to offer. I'm now offering a life skills program for youth and also a mentoring program for adults. Thank you so much for your support, and until next time.